The hailing frequencies are Oakham. Oakham. I don't know what that means. Hello and welcome to GHL Extra because I am Jason Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson, but you already knew that because you're beautiful, sexy people who support us here on Patreon. We just got finished talking with Eric Burnham about Godzilla and we bullied him into coming back.
That's right. Welcome back, Eric.
Hey, it feels like I just got here.
Yes. Right? Well, not only are you the writer of the upcoming Godzilla Monsters and Protectors, in case anybody doesn't remember, he's written Spider-Man, he's written Ghostbusters, he's written a lot of licensed work and stuff like that.
And video games.
And video
which
games.
Which we did not mention on the main episode.
We've titled this episode, How to Write Godzilla, and we kind of just want to pick your brain about writing characters that are not your babies, you know, like that you didn't originally. I mean, were you alive in 1954? Did you write the first Godzilla?
Not as far as I remember. But if I was writing in 1954, I would assume dementia had kicked in. So, you know, don't trust anything I say on that score.
You could be a time traveler. I'm just saying.
It's possible.
So, Eric, okay, when IDW, is it IDW? Excuse me, am I getting that right?
Sorry.
Okay, yeah. When IDW reached out to you and said, Eric, we got this great idea. We're going to work with Toho. We want you to write this new Godzilla book. Where do you start? Like, where do you begin your writing process for, like, writing and conquering a character that is as big and legendary and has a 60-year history?
Don't ask me to do math.
60-year history like Godzilla.
Oh, gosh. Well, the first thing that I do is take all the elements that they told me to include, which included, you know, it has to be for middle grade primarily. So the tween protagonist, it has to be funny, but Godzilla is played straight, taken seriously. It has to have these giant monsters they want to include. It has to have, you know, this theme. And then I have to figure out a story that connects it all together. And I'll be honest with you, it took me a while to figure out the approach. I think I went through three complete outlines for the five-issue series that came back with, no, that's not quite right. No, you have too much Godzilla and not enough kids. Now you have too many kids and not enough Godzilla. It's just,
Is that also common or not common just for our listeners in sort of licensed writing work?
It can be common, but it has not been my experience.
Oh, you're just that good. All right.
I've been that lucky.
This is why we had Eric on the podcast, everybody.
Yeah, it was pure luck. But this one, it had all of the elements don't necessarily work together, obviously. So like I said, kids are the protagonists. Godzilla is played straight. How do you make that work in a story? And that's what took me a couple of months to figure out.
Nice. So what for you, we're not going to get spoilers, everybody, because you all should read Godzilla Monsters and Protectors, published by IDW. It's perfect companion for Kong versus Godzilla. You know, the movie where that monkey is going to just down that lizard.
He's not a monkey. He's an ape.
That big monkey.
As an ape, we should know the difference.
Where's Kong Zuki?
I don't know. I don't think Kong has BBs.
Kongy. I don't know. Kingy. Little King?
Shouldn't he be called Prince if it's
a Prince Kong! There it is, Ashley. That's why you're a great writer.
Diddy King? I don't know.
Diddy King! Oh! I win! That's it. You have just given me a gift. Diddy King. Eric, we need you to call IDW right now.
Yes.
So what were some of your favorite parts of the process of writing and creating Godzilla Monsters and Protectors?
Well, I surely appreciated it when they said that everything was looking good and and all set. That was my favorite part. That was the weight off my shoulders. But I just had fun writing the kids. The first project I did for IDW was in 2009. It was called Nanivore Game Day. And it was based on a toy that was like in and out of stores during one holiday season and just vanished. So nobody picked up the book, but it was fun to write. It was a little bit snarky. It was a kid doing a vlog and narrating the story that way. And when I remember doing that, that's the hook we took for this book. We have our main character. He's doing a vlog for YouTube and explaining how he saved the world from Godzilla, basically. And that was the hook that made it easy for me to figure out how to proceed. He could gloss stuff over. He could make things up. He could tell things out of sequence because he got excited, and that made it easier to write, and it felt fun. And it was something that they like, something that they connected to. So when they said, this is good, we like this. Yeah, that was my favorite part. I like praise. Praise is awesome, especially when it's a tricky, tricky licensor.
So did you, how much autonomy did you have over creating the kid characters? Because they're, you know, with the exception of the Mothra twins, who you've talked a little bit about, they're completely original to you. Yes.
Yep. There, I had everything outside of the, you know, the checklist that I was handed. Mm-hmm. I was given a lot of a leeway with. Although I did find out, Godzilla has rules that you don't necessarily find out about until you trip onto them. One of them is, I had him breaching the water, and they said, okay, he can breach the water, but he has to land in a specific way. How is that a rule? How have you come up with that? And then I saw the trailer for Kong versus Godzilla, and he's breaching the water, and he lands in a specific way. So they have that rule. They had a couple other rules. They had decided
him landing like in that classic Marvel superhero pose, that one hand around.
Well, I was going to say, like, do you think this is like part of the idea of they're guarding that because when Godzilla, however he breaches the water, whatever, they want it to evoke the original man in the suit kind of stuff? Do you think that's the idea? I mean, I'm not actually asking for an answer. I'm just like sort of like,
no,
you know.
Yeah, no, when they find the logic, then that's how it goes, man. That's how the story is told. And in this case, they wanted to land like an animal, like a whale beaching, you know, on his belly flop.
Yeah, remember so, the whale thing from the Tenth Origin?
The whale
thing.
He's a gorilla whale. Yep.
That's it. So,
Diddy Kong doesn't have these rules, I'm telling you.
He has no rules. That's why we need him in the next series. But no, little things like that popped up where, you know, I didn't see him coming and, you know, make a quick change, tweak this. So I got off light, though. I only had a couple of things that I had to change that were, you know, fix this now, you know, rewrite these 10 pages mm-hmm. across the course of the miniseries, because I actually got everything done pretty quick. I wrote the 5 issues in just a couple of months, which was awesome. But that came out of having
make us look bad, Eric.
No, that came out of 3 months of outlining.
Where did
eventually?
How far ahead of this project were you? Like, when did you write and finish the issues?
Okay, so it started out a year ago. Was when I sent in the pitch. It was a couple of page pitch, and they accepted that. October is when I started. I got the go ahead to do the outlines, and eventually I got to the point where I didn't show them this. I wrote, you know, page one, pages 2, 3, 4, 5, and so on, and just beat it out all 5 issues. So that's what allowed me to write it so fast. But I finished the end of January. So November, December, January, it took me to write these 3. 5 issues.
Nice. Did you ever consider putting Godzuki in this book? Because it's an all ages book. I'm just saying, would have been perfect. Or were they just absolutely at the bottom of this list where they were like, no Godzuki, damn it.
You know, they have not given me any you can't uses. As a matter of fact, Dan and I were putting in as like an Easter egg. The kids were going to be playing a collectible card game. We were going to have Jet Jaguar on there.
And Dan, your artist, correct?
Dan Schoening, yes, sir. Dan Schoening and Luis Antonio Delgado, the art team Supreme.
And Dan, you worked on Ghostbusters, right?
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's always good working with Dan because he adds so much into every panel. And like I said, Easter eggs is what he loves. So we were going to work on the collectible card gang and put Jet Jaguar in there. And they said, maybe you shouldn't do that because you might want to use Jet Jaguar later. What? We can use Jet Jaguar? Oh, yeah, he's open. Okay, cool. We're going to take that out in case ever
what
come up with a story, you know, just to throw that in. It's yeah. So we could probably use Godzuki. We could probably use anybody. I'm trying to figure out a way to get King Caesar in there. it's going to be terrible. I'm going to call the book, I'll hype it up and they'll think I'm talking about Ghidorah, and then King Caesar comes out and then, you know, there's pitchforks and torches outside my door. But no, kids, King Caesar's fun. I like him. I like the look.
Now, you know, what I love is that we have some creators and writers as well that are also patrons of ours. And, you know, I've never written anything licensed in the world of comic books. So what would be your biggest piece of advice to a writer who is lucky enough to get a licensed piece of work? What would be your, like, number one piece of advice to that writer?
Okay. trying to figure out. Try to be as authentic to the property as you can. If the characters have a specific voice, don't try to write them differently. It's easier when characters come from movies or animation. You can hear how it sounds, and that gives you a good hint as to the rhythm of their speech, and that helps with word choice. And then, you know, that just makes everything easier. But if you're writing a Superman story, for example, just even though not technically licensed, but close enough, you know the character, you know this story, this plot point, this isn't going to work, it doesn't work for the character, don't do that. And really, that's all it is. Just know the characters well enough to know what you can't get away with. know the limits of your sandbox, even if you have to ask what they are. That's the best way to go.
I love that you mentioned asking, because I think people assume that creativity, and particularly with license work, happens in a box, and that it's just editors and producerly type people smacking you down. And I love that you brought that up, because there is, I'm saying this as someone who's never written licensed comics, but it's nice to hear that there is help available to you if you just ask.
Oh yeah, they will tell you what you can and can't do. Sometimes not until you trip across it, and sometimes if you ask ahead of time. But once you know what you can and can't do, then yeah, things open up, and it can be just like anything else. You know, don't go past this point. You know, don't go over this line, and then everything else works. The only other thing I should say that I would caution is to don't think of it like fanfic, where you can, whatever you want to do, whatever you want to throw out there is going to be approved, because sometimes you'll have your heart set on this thing happening or this line being in there, and they say, yeah, you can't do that. They wouldn't say that. This situation is not something we want our characters involved with, and then that can make other parts of your story crumble into little pieces, or just your enthusiasm. So, figure out the sandbox. It all boils back to what I said the first time. Figure it out and stay in there, and everybody's happy.
All right. Well, final question to you, Eric. You're a Godzilla expert. You're a Godzilla writer. Let's say Godzilla is real. You've just walked into the street. Godzilla. You can see Godzilla on the horizon. He's coming your way. What do you do?
What else is there to do but run for about 20 feet before I lose my breath and collapse and wheeze and then get stepped on? I'm afraid that's how it's going to end for me. I need to do more cardio. I just haven't gotten there yet.
You should all be so lucky. It's an epic end, actually.
I mean, I love that you're just very honest about it. So I personally would make as many Godzuki sounds as I could, hoping to trick Godzilla.
That's right.
Look, Godzilla is in a lot of ways like any major predator. If you leave him alone and stay out of his path, you'll be fine.
Yeah, basically. Just go the direction
that
he's not.
Don't stand on the TV tower filming him. He doesn't want to be online.
You can't TikTok Godzilla without his own permission. Okay. Eric, this has been amazing. Thank you so much for joining us on The Extra again. Please let everybody know, our patrons, about your Patreon, and also let them know where they can find you online.
Sure. Twitter and Instagram are the places that I'm most easily found. They're at Eric Burnham at both of them. E-R-I-K Burnham. And then my Patreon, where I do comic strips a couple of times a week and articles when I think of them, and keep trying to look for other things to add on there because I'm always worried that it's not enough. just a hodgepodge, an oleo, if you will.
And once you're Eric's patron, I encourage you to scroll back through some of those doodles, because our very own baby Jupiter Jet has made some sweet appearances there in the past.
Oh, it's true. Fun to draw. So fun to draw.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I highly recommend Eric is actually secretly like a stealth, amazing artist. He's one of those writers that actually can draw, unlike me. So, it's some good stuff over there. So go check that out. Everybody, thank you so much for your support of our podcast. It's because of you that this happens. So thank you so much. I'm Jason Inman.
I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson.
And goodbye, super friends.